that was my mentality. And I think the way that I did that was I shifted into my masculine, I disassociated, and I spent the next almost a decade swinging between kind of disassociation, driving really hard, thinking that if I could just achieve and get to where I wanted to get to, I'd feel better. And the other side of that, which was all of the pain that I refused to look at, was smashing me in the face. So I was having panic attacks. I had generalized anxiety disorder. I didn't even know what that was, but I was doing quite a lot of drugs and drinking.
Hello, welcome to Soul Awakenings with Madhya Sosan podcast. Today we have Amy Watson. Now, Amy is an intuitive guide, soul therapist, and a conscious life coach. She offers one-to-one sessions and programs to help women break through their limitations and consciously create a life they love, aligned with their soul purpose, power, and freedom. Let's have a chat with her.
Hi, Amy. How are you doing?
Hey, honey. Good morning. I'm really good. Thank you. Really good. I'm so excited about today.
I know. Me too. I've been waiting for, we've been canceling this for a while, but we're waiting to interview you.
We've done podcast tag, haven't we?
Yeah, when's this happening? Yeah, it's great. So I was just thinking back when we met. We actually met at one of the coaching sort of academy, I think, events, a two-day event. And I came across, our paths sort of crossed again when, where was it? It's an online retreat. You were given a guided meditation. It was beautiful, by the way. It was amazing.
Oh, thank you so much. I feel like we've zigzagged a few times, actually. And then, yeah, part of that transformation decoded, you've got to know Emma and Mickey and that crew. And yeah.
Yeah, this is a spiritual community. It seems like really small. Everyone knows each other.
It is tight knit. It's quite tight knit for sure.
Yeah. So obviously the audiences don't know who you are. I know who you are. But could you tell us a bit about yourself, like a brief overview for our listeners?
Yeah, sure. Thanks so much. So it's evolved quite a lot, I'd say, in the last 6 months. But where I'm at now is I've trained in yoga and meditation. So I'm a yoga meditation teacher kind of traditionally, but I'm also a conscious life coach and soul therapist and intuitive guide. So what that means is I kind of do some of the traditional life coaching stuff, but it's from the soul's perspective. So we go a whole load deeper, rely a lot more on intuition, a lot more on kind of the esoteric and energetic side, as well as the more kind of traditional mindset, neuroscience stuff.
Yeah, amazing. So, you know, like, obviously, when I met you at the Decoded event, online retreat, you were given a guided meditation. Now, in our spiritual community, meditation plays a huge part in our lives. And, you know, there may be some people who are aware of it. There may be some people who aren't aware of it. What is meditation and how can people benefit from it?
Oh, great question. I mean, okay, so what is meditation? Meditation for me, and there's many different types, right? But really simply put, is just a stopping doing and just being. So what that looks like for me is focusing your awareness on one point and watching. It's kind of a shifting from being the person that's doing everything to the one that's just watching. It's almost like a dropping back, a stepping back, a sitting back into a position of observer. And this can have a myriad of benefits for us. Number one, when do you do that in the day, right? You're so constantly kind of just doing and in the story of your life that there's a real benefit of just creating some space to watch. There's also, I mean, we're human beings, not human doings, right? So to create a bit of space just to be, it's got to be a benefit. For me, it's about creating space where we can watch and get to know ourselves. We can watch our thoughts. We can watch the emotions that are coming up. And the more that we can create that space, it benefits us when we're not meditating, when we're not sat in that, you know, on our meditation cushion or whatever, because it gives us space to be able to observe and then respond in our day-to-day lives. So oftentimes we react kind of unconsciously. It's just knee-jerk subconscious programmings. And for me, meditation has allowed space to be able to have that extra second or even a half second where you take a breath before you respond. And that is the absolute pivotal shift to start living more consciously from a place of informed choice rather than just the reactionary subconscious programs that so many of us are in when we're living at that crazy fast pace.
That's beautifully said. I mean, how can people, I know there's a lot of people say, oh, I can't focus, I can't even focus for 5 minutes. What can they do to bring themselves in that moment?
Yeah, great question. I think there's a couple of things. One thing that was a great, I suppose learning for me is there's not one type of meditation. There's not one right way to do it. I think it's a bit of an exploratory journey to figure out what works for you. So some of my clients, they can't sit still. Their meditation is their walk. There's a walking meditation, or it's whilst they're running, or it's when they're in flow, when they're boxing. Some people really can't sit because it's uncomfortable. So it's about finding where is that place where when you can relax, when you can be in a state of observation, and when you can be in a sense of flow. So I think sometimes that takes a little bit of finding, number one. So what was the other side part of that question? So what would you say to people that say they can't meditate? One, find what works.
Yeah, the other is that how can they just sit with it?
Yeah. And that's discipline. So I think for me, it's kind of just giving yourself a break and saying, this isn't meant to be easy. You know, meditation is not about stopping your thoughts. I think there's a really big kind of fallacy out there where we think, right, to meditate well must mean that everything just goes completely silent and we're in the abyss and we become no thing. And yeah, that's possible, but that's to start with that expectation is way too much. I think this idea of relaxing is your number one first step, starting by taking deeper breaths. You know, so every time if I lead anyone through a meditation, we start with the breath, dropping the breath down into the belly, shifting the sympathetic to the parasympathetic nervous system, that rest and digest. So getting your body relaxed is the first step. So I would say to someone who says, I absolutely can't meditate, my client at the moment, we've just done an 8-week course and her healing has been through hypno meditative journeying, and she told me she couldn't meditate. Everyone can meditate, but the hacks are focus on your breath, allow the breath to bring your awareness down into your body from the mind, and take the pressure off the belief that you're meant to be having no thoughts. And then find wherever feels comfortable for you. That might be walking, that might be sitting in a quiet room, that might be lying down in your bed. Figure out what works for you and honor that.
Yeah, and it's and it kind of when you start meditating, it brings you in the present moment or automatically. You start, you don't, some people think about other things, but sometimes it just quiets your mind automatically once you get the hang of it. But there was another thing, as I was reading on or watching, I can't remember, I watched so many things. Someone mentioned when you can't sit with, when you can't meditate, focus on a candle. You don't have to be like some like a Zen like you know person who's like, you know, okay, I need to be in this pot here and I need to do this, I need to do that, and then I need to close my eyes, and then it's like, and then your mind starts going, it's like, I'm not doing something right. So you can open your eyes and focus on a candle, maybe, perhaps. And when you focus on the candle, you're solely focusing on the candle rather than 10,000 different thoughts going on in your head.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think what you're hitting on there is that single pointed focus, that single pointed concentration. So pick that one thing that you're going to focus on to begin with. Could be a candle, could be just watching your breath, the whole inhale, the whole out exhale, could be sitting watching the waves when you're sat at a beach, an ocean, you know. It, but as long as you can, like you said, our mind is jumping around. We have thousands of thoughts a day. Just bringing it in and picking one thing, even that is so powerful. Like, I'm just getting in my mind now. It's like we always have all these tabs open in our mind. And meditation feels to me like just closing them all and picking one and being like, I'm just going to watch this video.
Yeah, I absolutely love it. I mean, it took me a little bit while to get into it, but it was just incredible. I ended up just meditating for like an hour without even realizing that it was an hour. I thought it was like 10 minutes. It was like an hour, but Yes, it's amazing, amazing. So I was reading something the other day actually about meditation. Now there are apparently 9 different types of meditation. Now I can't remember them all, but it's like there was one focused meditation, guided meditation, yoga meditation. There was other ones. I was like, wow, that is that I thought I just sit and meditate and that's it. And you know, I knew about guided meditation, but I did not know all different types of meditation, like you just pointed out. You know, you can be at a beach or something watching the waves, and that is, you are meditating in a way. Yeah, that's beautiful. I believe you can, yeah, sorry, go for it.
Sorry. Yeah, what I find super helpful in terms of thinking about those two types of meditation, I went and did a Tibetan Buddhist meditation course when I sort of first started meditating, and they split it between kind of what we understand as vipassana or vipassana meditation, and then kind of more purpose-led meditation. Mm-hmm. And that's how we can have so many different purposes to why we meditate. Essentially, we're exploring our internal world, but one is we're not really doing anything with it. Like you said, you're dropping into the present moment. It's becoming kind of that no thing. That's the vipassana, just the watching. And then there's a plethora, I mean, 9,000 maybe, things that we can then do in our internal world as we realize that we are multidimensional, right? Mm. Whether that's like compassion meditation, forgiveness, inner journeying. But to keep it simple in my mind is every day I try and just do that stillness, that whether you want to call it vipassana, just that watching that one thing, the breath. And that for me is, that's the foundation of my meditation practice. That is like, yeah, the foundation level that I then build my house on to do other crazy things. So I'd say to anyone that's starting meditation, start with that. You don't need anything crazy. Find one thing to focus on, set a time, don't negotiate that, just set it and do it every day. That will build your foundation more than anything else.
Can you go like really deep enough for you to have a spiritual, profound spiritual experience? Have you ever had that in your life?
Yeah, I have. I did. Have you ever done a Vipassana course?
No.
So it's like 10 days and you meditate like 11 hours a day. And you start to experience the kind of truth of reality, which blows your mind. Like we're 99.9% space. Yeah. Two, we're kind of built up of our awareness. That's what's bringing things into existence. And there's an electrical kind of, there's a charge to everything. So yeah, two things that were really profound for me. One was feeling my body not as a solid thing, but as these charges of electrical current. So it was like I dissolved, is how it felt. And I could just feel the waves of energy moving through. And then you can feel where the blocks are. Your subconscious mind is your body, right? And I've always had this block on my shoulder. It was the last day of Vipassana. And I knew it was, my mum has the same, so it's something ancestral. And it's the last day of Vipassana, we're meditating halfway through the day. And it's like, I felt, you know, like if you ever see a bubble coming up through oil, it moves really slowly, like, whoop, and it goes bloop, at the top. This knot that was like deep in my shoulder suddenly felt like this. This bubble just came to the surface and went bloop. And I literally heard this, like, bloop. And that knot that had been held right underneath my shoulder blade for the whole of my life just completely disappeared.
Wow.
And I was like, and I couldn't even feel my body as a solid thing. And I was like, this is nuts.
Oh, that is incredible. That is incredible. The most I get is when I meditate, when I deeply meditate, I kind of like feel like I'm moving in like a circle direction or something. Yes. And also my forehead starts tingling, like it's just constant tingling on my third eye. It's incredible. It's like I can sit here and all experience this.
Yeah, I know, it's amazing. Once you start to really tap in and get connected, like we're infinite, right? We are part of all that is, so we can go and do anything within our internal worlds. There's many places and experiences I've had because of my own internal journeys, and that's what I lead clients through. The beginning and what amazed me, and it might be helpful for people just starting their journey as well, my second one is I looked after this is a bit of a random, but I looked after a cat that was hit by a car and he was part paralyzed, and I healed and looked after this cat for like 3 months when I was going through a lot of shit for myself. And I love this little thing so much. I mean, he was just trusted me so much. He was just gorgeous, and he totally kept my heart open at a time when it was really broken. And when I started meditating, first of all, you used to meditate with me until I left for India, and used to sit and purr with me. And when I went to India, and ever since, until he passed away, I found that thinking of that love for him, and it's, this works with anything, thinking of your true, pure love or gratitude for any person or thing drops you down into your heart space. And for me, it feels like my awareness goes from the kind of churning of my thoughts. It just drops into my heart and my awareness flows right out. Mm-hmm. And it feels like love, gratitude is like the key. It's like the portal to really access your true being in the present moment in meditation. So I'd say to anyone starting, start with that, really feel into your heart and feel that gratitude. And it helps you drop down from the head.
Beautiful, beautiful. Do some guided meditation for us, like 5-minute guided meditation.
Sure, let's do it.
Yeah, okay, I'm just gonna mute myself, so.
All right, beautiful. So if you guys are listening, I'd invite you just to find a comfortable position, whether that's lying down, whether it's your feet flat on the floor or cross-legged. And first of all, just start by bringing your hands onto your legs with the palms facing upwards. Close down or soften the eyes, whatever feels comfortable for you. And just start by taking a deep inhale through the nose. And as you do, draw the shoulders all the way up towards the ears, squeeze them up. And then exhale, drop them down the back and sigh out through the mouth. Allow the forehead to soften, the muscles around the eyes and the jaw, and allow the tongue to peel away from the roof of the mouth. Allow your next inhale to draw down through the chest and into the belly so the belly can start to expand, almost like a balloon inflating. And as you exhale, allow the breath to release through the mouth, releasing any stress, any tension. Taking two more breaths like this with the intention to really just start to slow everything down. These next two breaths are going to be the slowest, the deepest breaths that you've taken all day, as you draw the breath in, allowing the belly to expand out. Exhale, release. Final deep inhale as you draw that breath down to the very pit of the stomach, the very root of the body. And exhale, allowing any tension, any tightness, any stickiness out with the breath. And I want you to imagine now, as the breath returns to its own natural rhythm, that every inhale is like drawing in a beautiful white light. You can see, sense, feel, or know that this bright white light, this prana, this life force, this energy that we draw in with the breath is drawing into the heart space, is lighting it up. And then with every exhale, that light is starting to expand. So every inhale starts to light up the center of the chest, the center of the heart, so that it's glowing. And every exhale, that light starts to expand, expand past the shoulders, in front of you and behind you. Expand all the way down past your feet and above your head, so that you are cocooned in your mind's eye in this beautiful white light, this space of grace. And I'm just going to lead you now through a short connection meditation, our vertical axis. So from that white light in your heart center, on your next inhale, I want you to imagine that you're drawing that light down, drawing the light with your awareness down through the heart, through the belly. Using every inhale to draw that light down, down into the pelvis, the pelvic bowl, the root. Drawing that light down, down through the thighs, the legs, the knees. Drawing that light down through the calves. all the way to the ankles, through the top of the feet, through all of the toes, right down to the soles of the feet. And then I want you to imagine that that light is simply flowing out through the soles of your feet, reaching down through the floor, all the way down to the point of connection with the earth, with the soil. And imagining that light reaching down, continuing in its journey all the way down through the soil, through the rocks, through the layers of the earth, in whatever way you see, sense, or feel it. Maybe like roots, maybe like shards of light, maybe like a thread or tendrils. And this light is going to reach the very center of the earth, where there's the same glowing orb of light, white light, that there is at your heart center. And as you take your next deep inhale now, feeling that connection, your heart connected to the heart of the earth. And that energy now connected, feeling your body relaxed, held, supported by the energy of the earth below you that you're part of, connected to. And using your next inhale to draw that energy back up through those roots, those tendrils, those shards of light, back up through the soles of your feet, back up through your ankles, your calves, your knees, your thighs, inhaling that light all the way back up through your pelvis, through your core, your torso, all the way back up into your heart center. As that light continues to draw up, all the way up to your throat, washing over your hands, your arms, your shoulders, drawing that beautiful white light up now through the throat, into the head, the insides of the ears, the mouth, behind the nose, the inside of the skull, the pineal gland, the third eye, drawing that light up now until that light shoots up through the crown of the head. Seeing, sense, feeling, or simply knowing that that light now is making its way up, up past the top of the room you find yourself in, up into the sky, past any clouds, up past our atmospheres, stratosphere, into the cosmos itself, all the way up past the stars, past the blackness, to a place of pure light, to all that is, to source, to one love, as you take a deep breath in and feeling that connection from your heart to the heart of that paternal energy all the way above you. And again, feeling that connection now below and above. And on your next inhale, allowing that energy, that source, that love to be drawn back into your being, back through the crown of your head, washing over each and every of the trillions of cells in your body, drawing back down through the head, the third eye, through the throat, into your heart. Feeling that light bathing all of the space within your being. Taking the next three breaths to breathe in, almost as though every inhale you're lighting up, like a bulb turning on, your whole being, vibrating with that lightness, vibrating with that love, and allowing your awareness to expand with a sense of freedom, space, and safety in the fact that you are so held, so loved, so supported. And when you're ready, starting to wriggle your fingers, wriggle your toes, bring your hands back together and rub the palms together, make them nice and toasty warm, get some energy between them, and then place those hands over the closed eyes, block out any light and blink open the eyes into your internal darkness, your inner world, the realm of your infinite possibilities. Look up, look down, to the right and to the left. Take a big circle around in one direction and then the other. And then gently blinking the eyes as you slowly draw the hands away from the face, coming back into the here and the now.
Wow. That was so good. It was even better than the one we went to the online retreat. It was amazing.
Oh, bless you.
Thank
the problem
you
with
so
it is
much.
You don't want to leave that place.
I
You're
know.
like, oh, then let's just stay here.
Yeah, you feel so light hearted as well. Like it's like all of your, even if whenever you're feeling really heaviness around your heart or whatever, overthinking, it just takes away in that moment. It's really hard to explain. It's just really hard to explain. It's like a magical cure that hardly anyone knew about until,
yeah,
like, you
so true.
Yeah, it's amazing. Okay, so obviously, okay, so we know that, you know, you do amazing meditations and you're, oh God, you're an amazing teacher. So let's go back to the beginning. What were you like as a child? How was your upbringing?
Well, it's so interesting, actually. Thank you. Like, I feel like so much of our life is like almost a remembering, isn't it? It's kind of an unlearning. And how I was as a child is probably more like I am now than the last kind of like 20 years in between. So as a kid, I was super sensitive. I was really blessed with an amazing childhood, actually, for quite some time. Loved my brother. We were like best mates, you know. I just have a lot. I grew up in the country, so just a lot of running around and playing, innocence. I totally believed in fairies when I was little. A lot of adventures trying to find like hidden crystals in quarries and like just so much make-believe stuff going on. But I could definitely read energy. So I, without knowing that maybe that was an unusual thing, 100% knew how people were feeling in their body. You know, we'd go into like woods and be able to see sort of dancing energies. We'd go into new houses and not be able to stay in a room. Even in some of our rooms in our house, would know when a dark energy was there and would lose my shit. So yeah, super sensitive, really just happy kid, very playful, and just loved life, having the freedom of being in the country. I was very, very blessed in that sense. Very blessed, very grateful.
Amazing. You said like you were seeing energies at that time. Did you at some point think it was crazy, or you losing you're different than other kids?
Yeah, it's a really great question. Like, I never cognitively thought, oh, not everyone can do this. Like, I just assumed that was normal because my mum was really kind of accepting of it. Like, apparently, like when I was two, I literally like stood up in my cot and like screamed, like staring at nothing in the corner of the room. But then I remember at the age of like 16 going into our attic and this dark energy moving through me, literally towards and through me. I screamed, sprinted downstairs, and my mum put her hand up and told it to fuck off. So like it was like very accepted.
Yeah.
But I would say there was like, there must have been a knowing in me because I never really shared it with anyone, never really told anyone at school. And what did happen, it was very subtle, but I kind of noticed that my sensitivity at school with friends didn't serve me. It wasn't necessarily the spiritual stuff, but they're so connected, right? Like if you're very sensitive, you're going to be sensitive often energetically and physically. And my sensitivity often meant I got hurt, you know, like I made other people's stuff about me. I got upset quite easily. And so I sort of was starting to make these decisions that my sensitivity, but also some of the gifts that came with that, was like always, it was an absolute weakness. And so, yeah, I didn't think necessarily I was different. I thought I wasn't as good, or there was something wrong with me, and I started to shut it down.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people who are highly sensitive or empaths go through the same thing. And and I guess like when kids actually say, oh, I'm seeing this person and you can't see it, I truly believe that they do see something. They do see is maybe perhaps spirit or energy, like you mentioned, but we kind of brush it aside, and then we get kind of programmed into thinking, well, you know, it just must be in my head when it isn't.
Yeah, absolutely. We do start to doubt it, and it kind of gets put into that box of make believe. You know, like, oh, well, you used to believe in fairies and Santa, and all that stuff can go in there too. And so it's like, oh, but to grow up means stopping all of that. And it's so dismissive. But I remember doing loads of hocus pocus stuff. I don't know why. It's like, I remember trying to do, when my grandpa died, I was 9 and I started doing a Ouija board to talk to him.
Really?
Like, what the hell? I remember getting told off at school because they're like, you're not allowed to do the Ouija board at school. Like, that's kind of like, that's scary. Like, that's just not okay. I was like, oh, so I used to go and do it at my friend's attic. And I look back and I was like, God, that was a bit witchy for like a 9-year-old.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess like in movies these days don't help because they make it into some sort of horrifying, scary movies. But in reality, it's not that, you know?
Yeah, it's so true. Yeah, so- and this idea that there's like good and evil, like there's dark forces. I totally don't believe in that. Like, I really believe in the law of one, like that, like only love is real. Everything else is illusion.
Absolutely. Totally agree with that. Totally agree with that. So, you know, obviously, were you spiritual at that point? Were you spiritual, grown up in a spiritual household?
No, I wouldn't say no. It wasn't like explicit and accepted. Like, my mum had like a deep knowing, and our conversations have got more spiritual as I've become more spiritual as an adult. So she had a knowing and an understanding, but actually, bizarrely, it was a very conservative household. Like, used to go to church. My grandma was very strict. There was a lot around etiquette and, you know, doing what you ought to do. It was very kind of rigid and stoic and British in that sense, actually. Having said that, I lived near Glastonbury. And so I remember filling my room with incense and like yin yang symbols and little angels and, you know, kind of intuitively being drawn, and crystals, and being drawn to all of that, but never labeling it as, or identifying myself as that, because there was no space for it. It was like, no, you're Christian. And I kind of went to, you know, Bible studies and all of that. And some of the morals made sense to me, but it never really sat well. But yeah.
Okay. So I know, I'm aware that when we were talking about your awakening, so you had awakening as well. So what was the series of events that led you to your awakening? What happened to you?
Sure. So like I said, like my family upbringing was very kind of, it's quite British and stoic. And my personality type was very much like, right, okay, well, let's be the good girl. And so there was all of that, like, you know, achiever type mentality. So that was kind of that peppered through my university years and as I was going into my 20s. And I really felt like, oh, we have this perfect little family unit, me and my brother and my mum and my dad, and we all love each other and it's great. And I'm going to do really well and da da da. And then aged 20, my brother was on his gap year a couple of months in, and he was on a motorbike with a friend on the back, and a lorry came around the corner on the wrong side of the road and he died. He was hit. The guy on the back of his motorbike survived because of the way he, like, basically threw himself under this lorry to save his friend. And that was my worst, like, that was my worst nightmare, that he was my favorite person in the whole world. And I, like, there was some weird stuff that happened before it, where I actually said to a friend a week before he died, if I ever lost my brother, I don't know what I would do. Like, I think I'd lose my mind. He's the most important person to me. And I was like, why did I say that a week before? So that happened, and I made the choice in my head. So that was the first thing that like shook my reality, you know, it broke it. It broke this perfect little image I have of everything. But rather than facing it or allowing that to change me, you know, that you talk about often, you know, the heart that breaks open. I did the opposite. I refused to look at it. I was like, the worst thing in the world has happened to me. I'm not going to let it ruin my life. Like, it's already shit enough. That was my mentality. And I think the way that I did that was I shifted into my masculine, I disassociated, and I spent the next almost a decade swinging between kind of disassociation, driving really hard, thinking that if I could just achieve and get to where I wanted to get to, I'd feel better. And the other side of that, which was all of the pain that I refused to look at, was smashing me in the face. So I was having panic attacks. I had generalized anxiety disorder. I didn't even know what that was, but I was doing quite a lot of drugs and drinking. And so it was this weird pendulum swing that I was living of like trying to hold all my shit together, not even knowing what it meant to sit and feel your feelings, being there for everyone else, trying to prove that I could do it. And internally, just, it was so painful. You know, I don't think I realized how much pain I was in until I look back now and compare it to how I feel on the day to day now. So that was the first thing. The second thing, about 6 years after that, my parents' marriage started to break down. Without going into all of the details, obviously, because it's their privacy, I do think losing my brother was a big part of that. Maybe it would have happened anyway, but it was super hard because it was a very messy divorce and I was there in the middle without my brother suddenly. So that was like this perfect little, you know, my, if we go back to my childhood, right, my everything was this perfect little unit that I had, and then lost my favorite person, parents destroy each other. In the meantime, I hear the worst things about each, you know, so caught in the crossfire, I'm still in the mindset of I'll solve this, I'll hold it together, I'll keep achieving. Don't look at my emotions. Still not on a healing path. So the universe is like, okay, carry on. We'll see what happens. So I'm like, I'll just get a great relationship, start my own family. It's all good. Mm-hmm. Fall in love with someone, move to Canada. Off I go. The universe is like, do you actually even like, do you like you? Do you like this person? What's going on? Still, so I'm still running, right? Mm-hmm. Anyway, this relationship is very toxic, ends up being, I mean, not surprising, you know, considering I'm still running. Mm. Life's your mirror. I think maybe they're in the same boat. It was that typical empath narcissist, what do you call it, kind of structure. Mm. Anyway, long story short, ends up being complete shit show of a year. I am absolutely on my knees emotionally, physically, mentally, the whole works. And it just reaches this point where I've come back to the UK for my best friend's wedding with him. Got 2 weeks where he's going to meet all of my family after I've lived in his neck of, you know, his part of the world for a year. And the next morning he just gets up and walks out in the middle of the country, tries to take the keys to the car. I was like, I'm going back to Canada. I can't be fucked to meet your family. Screw this. Don't come back. Hmm. And I was like, it just broke me. Absolutely broke me. It was after already a succession of, I mean, if anyone's been in a very toxic relationship, they'll know the how destabilizing techniques like gaslighting and ghosting and all of that has on you anyway. And this had been ramping up over a year. So I was already just so lost within it. So lost as to who I even was at this point. I was really losing myself. So that he left and I just couldn't do it anymore. Mm. And that was the point that I broke. Mm. And it was also the point that I started to awaken. Mm. Because everything that I thought, all of that external stuff that I thought defined me, that my identity was attached to, the partner, the high-flying career, the nice apartment, the salary, the group of friends, the holidays I had, all of those things were no longer possible, were no longer mine. And I was left being like, A, what the fuck do I do now? I'd always planned 6 months ahead. You know, I'm an achiever type, right? I know what I'm doing. There's control freak going on. Mm. Ego is massively in control. And suddenly that wasn't an option. I had to surrender. The universe had tried whispering to me for years. It got to the point of shouting. And then I think the universe just went, nope, plonked me outside of the situation. Yeah. I ended up coming to Turkey to my mum's house. And that was the start of my, what I called at the time, rude awakening.
Mm-hmm. So I know losing someone you love is a traumatic experience itself, and the pain is unbearable. And I remember when my dad passed away, it's a pain that you can't describe it. How did you react when you found out about your brother's death, and how did it impact your life?
So when I found out, I remember where I was. I was in the library in Manchester, and I got a text from my dad saying, hey, I need to speak to you. Where are you? And that was the first moment when like a stomach dropped, because he would always just pick up the phone and talk to me. And I thought my grandma had died, like his mum in her 90s. So I was like, oh shit, grandma's died. And you have that like horrible moment where you're just like, okay. So I tell him that I'm in the library. He's like, right, I'm driving to you. And I was like, oh fuck, it must be bad, you know? So I'm like preparing myself for that. And so I go out and meet him and I get into the car. And there's something that never prepares you to see your parents break down. Like they're your parents, you know, like they're not. Yeah. So that seeing he was broken and he was like, okay, get in the car. And then he was like, raw, that's my name, my brother has died. And I was like, nah, I refuse to believe it. And he was like, we need to go down to Somerset because our family home was down the south of the UK. My mum was down there. He was like, we need to go there now. And he could barely drive. He was like on the verge of a panic attack. It's a 4.5 hour drive. He was in that state most of the way. Half the time I'd have to drive for him. And the only way that I survived that is in my head. I was like, nah, like there has to be like, A, he might not be dead. Maybe he's still in a hospital. Are we sure? You know, where's that come from? It was almost like my brain was like fact checking. It was like that. It can't just happen like that. That this person that's like your whole world just isn't there. Like it just didn't compute. It was like cognitive dissonance. Like, so I was in denial and it slowly started to register on the way down. But I don't know if you had this. It's almost like your brain can only process them not being around in like snippets. Yeah. So it's like, okay, let's accept that reality. That's like a tidal wave of grief. And you're like, nope, let's close that again. And so that's kind of what happens, isn't it? You sort of go through these periods of opening up to that new, this new track that you're suddenly on without them in your life anymore and feel into it. And I think someone described it to me like, if your life is like a box, when you have grief to begin with, it's like the box is full with this big ball that takes, it's like the whole width of the box and it takes it all up. And there's like almost no escaping this ball that is your grief. So you bump up against it all the time. And you literally like trying to live is really fucking hard at the beginning, but that ball gets smaller and smaller. So when you bump up against it, it still feels just as painful.
Yes.
5 years on, 10 years on, but it doesn't, you don't bump up against it as much. And I honestly can say that that made sense to me and resonated for me. But how it's evolved is, I truly believe grief and love, like grief is a portal to love. We live in a polarity existence. When I really drop into missing my brother, when it hits me, even now, and those tears start to come and it hurts. It's so physical, isn't it? It really hurts. I feel his love bigger, stronger. I feel him closer than ever. So it's almost like to connect with him, I have to go into that. That love and grief are two sides of the same coin. It affected my life. How did I cope? I decided to try and look after everyone else. I looked after his ex-girlfriend, I was there for my parents. We were, as a family, were there for all of his friends, probably at our own expense. We had to go out and get his body. We looked after the friends he was traveling with, you know. So I very much focused on that, everyone else. And then I broke down intermittently in between all of that. So I think it massively destabilized me.
Yeah, I get that as well. Like when my dad passed away, for a couple of days, you know, we get a lot of people in our house, like, you know, just to pay respects. And I was the one who was just joking and laughing, not realizing that my dad just passed away. And they were looking at me like, her dad just passed away. And she's laughing and joking as in like she's got some sort of like celebration or something. But when they left, that's when it kind of really hit me and I broke down. Like it was just, the pain was intense. And then it went again, like it went again. And then it came back again, like a couple of days again. So I totally get you, the point where, you know, it doesn't open up constantly. It just opens up in like little piece, like little glimpses.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. I know I went through a dark night of soul after all of my experiences. So I know you have to some extent as well. So what is like dark night of the soul and how can people navigate through it, to, you know, to our listeners who don't know what it is, or maybe they're going through it and not realizing that it's dark night of the soul?
Interesting. Great question. So how to recognize what it is and how to navigate it. So it literally felt to me like I couldn't see a way forward. So it was almost like someone had pulled down like a black curtain in front of me and I couldn't see where my life was going to go. Nothing made sense. It was a real, like, you know, like when the rug's pulled out from underneath you, it's kind of that feeling. Because essentially what's happening, if we look at it kind of from a neuroscience perspective or a psychology perspective, is an ego identity is dying. Who you thought you were in relationship to other important aspects of your life that make up your identity can no longer exist because the circumstances have changed. So that's kind of what's happening psychologically. What's happening spiritually is you're evolving. And it's that chrysalis to butterfly, right? You were a caterpillar. Now you're in a chrysalis. You're going to come out as a butterfly. But what happens in the chrysalis is you literally turn to mush. So it's a great question to say, how can you navigate it? And I honestly, surrender. You know, life is happening for you, to you. The deeper that you can lean in and build up faith that whatever is this, like there's some great truths that I learned that have been my like life jacket, I suppose, through those dark nights of the soul. One is, life is always trying to help you. You know, life is benevolent. So anything that gets taken away is going to be replaced with something better. If you can believe that and hold steadfast to that, you can let go of things. And the easier that you can let go of things that are being stripped off you, the smoother your journey is going to be.
Oh, yeah.
The more ease and grace.
Beautifully said, because in a way, it is your ego death. It is a part of you is dying that needs to die in order for you to evolve. I think it's you just said it perfectly then. So, you know, now I'm aware that you spent some time in India. And you met Dalai Lama. Oh my God, seriously? What was that experience like for you?
Oh my God, that was nuts. So that was part of it. So breakdown, moved to my mom's dark night of the soul, didn't know what was going to happen. Like people describe it to me as like, just be like a kid. Like a kid will be playing in the field and then parents will be like, no, we've got to go inside now. And there's like this willingness. They have no idea what's coming. They're just willing to just go with the flow. The more we can be like children, the easier life will be. So that's what it was like. I kind of gave up. I surrendered. I said, universe, I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do, over to you. And then there was this weird thing where I was like, I just need to learn how to meditate. I think that's going to help me. I need to learn like what's unconscious in me. Started meditating a bit. And I was like, where can I learn to meditate properly? Well, the Dalai Lama knows how to meditate. I'll go to where he is. This is literally how simplistic my mind was and how naive. Like, where is the Dalai Lama? Fuck, he's not even in Tibet. Okay, where is it? Place in India. Okay, how do I get there? And that's how it started. So I booked to go to this Tibetan Buddhist meditation course, 10 days. In Himal Prakash, Dharamkot, in India. And that turned into like this 3-month journey. Wow. So I go to this thing and I'm like, okay, what does it involve? Okay, it's 10 days of silence. I thought, great, because I really don't want to talk to anyone at the moment anyway. Life's shit. Like, I really don't want to chat about it. So I was like, silence sounds fab. And then I was like, okay, food's meant to be good. That's important to me. Fine. And I'm going to learn how to meditate. Great. On a plane, off I go. And all the way, I was like, God, it'd just be so cool to meet the Dalai Lama. And like during Dark Night of the Soul, I don't know, it's different for everyone as to when this comes in. But for me, I really started, I was like, there was like a crazy thirst to learn how the world was working, because the way I thought it worked didn't make any sense anymore. So I was like reading all this stuff and I was like, God, I was reading a book on Dalai Lama and they were like, you know, he just exudes such compassion. It's amazing to be in his presence, yada, yada, yada. So I was writing in my journal being like, dear universe, I was like starting to learn law of attraction stuff. Dear universe, it would be so amazing. Thank you so much for letting me meet the Dalai Lama. It'd be so cool, you know. And so I was writing this in my journal for maybe 3 days, but we were doing this 10-day course and we didn't leave the kind of, I don't know what you call it, like the residence of this course. And the Dalai Lama is like in his own temple, the other end of Dharamkot. It's the winter. Apparently he doesn't give speeches in the winter. It's not his jam. So like there was no chance. And I was like, okay. But something in me was just like, yeah. Wake up day 3 of this 10-day meditation course, go down, start a meditation. They were like, right, guys, bit of a change of plan today, completely out the blue, really unexpected. The Dalai Lama is going to give a talk. So we're going to go to that and you'll get to meet him. And I was like, what the actual work? So that's how it happened. We ended up going to his temple. He gave a talk. He walked in and we were kind of past the railings and we were passing him, you know, like scarves and stuff like this. And I locked eyes with him. And if you've ever been in the presence of a master soul, it's really hard to describe, but you know, his love poured through every part of me. And I was just grinning like an absolute idiot, like a Cheshire cat, just like, like, and I was like that all day, just on a high. So that's how that happened. I asked the universe, and the universe delivered.
Yeah, it's amazing because there's not, when you meet these like very high vibrational souls, you can feel and you can sense the energy of them and you just completely, and I met a few, not very well known, but you can even sense it around and you know that these people that you're around, oh my God, their light is there. It's you know, shining the room where you are. That's incredible experience. So, you know, I really want to just continue with this podcast because it's just incredible hearing you and your experiences. But obviously, like, you know, we're running out of time. Can you tell us, like, about the work that you are doing right now?
Yeah, sure. So I think India started for me. The question that was like my red thread through that dark night of the soul, through that sort of learning stage, was what lights me up? I wanted to come back. I realized I was just so unhappy. I wanted to live a life where I felt that feeling of joy that I knew I had as a kid. So I followed what was lighting me up. And it was so much like heed his path. So I just explored all these things that lit me up. Reiki and yoga and meditation and breath work and drawing. And I drew mandalas for like 6 months. And like, wow. So did all of these things. And what it was like an unfolding. I don't think I could have planned it, but it's led me towards what I do now. And it really downloaded in India, like my dharma, my purpose, my soul's purpose to be here is to help bring people back to balance. Balance between, and this might make sense to some people and not to others, and I can always explain it if you want to, but that internal balance of masculine and feminine energies, that balance between what we do outwardly in the world and what are in our inner worlds, that balance between connecting down to the earth and up to the ascended energies. All about coming back to balance, because when we're in balance, we can live in harmony with each other, we can live in harmony with the world. And that's what's it's missing right now. That's why we're destroying this world. We're in this primitive cancer-like brain. So my work is all about bringing people back to balance, and I do that by reconnecting them to, like we did in the meditation, it's that vertical axis. You're connected into your higher, you're grounding down, and as above, so below. The deeper you can ground, the higher you can go to connect your higher self, your soul, the higher aspect of yourself. And that's my work, really, helping people break through all the shit, like I got pulled through kicking and screaming. I help people fast track that and do it loads easier, less pain, less suffering, to connect to their soul's purpose and their power and freedom, because it brings so much joy and so much love into your life.
That is incredible, because, you know, obviously, I love hearing stories like yours. So many people, they may go through adversities and they may go through, they live like their life unconsciously for a while, but then they have the spiritual awakening that leads them on a completely different path, completely new life. And it's not a life of I'm being selfish. It's a life of helping people. It just comes naturally.
Yeah, because that's the truth, right? You realize that actually when you're living in service in a way that's in balance and is serving you too, but that's what lights me up. I can be having a really shit day and then do a healing on someone and it lifts, like there's like borrowed benefits. It lifts us both up because we're both connecting to that higher place. And also, like, it's a spiral path, right? It's not like you're awakened, job done, like cool, I'm now living as an angel, you know, like like it's a spiral path. So we keep you know, breaking our glass ceiling, and the job of the ego is to keep us safe. So we always are smashing through the next glass ceiling if we follow a path of our soul's growth. And at each stage, I think it's helpful to understand what's trying to pull you back. And that's where I love working with people's subconscious minds, love undoing the programming, taking the soul's gift, bringing love back in, you know, like it just makes it so much easier. And I'm quite impatient. I'm an Aries. So the faster that I can do that with people and bring in love, that feels really good to me.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I believe you have a program as well. Would you like to tell the audience about?
Yeah, thanks so much. So my program is called Breakthrough Program, and it's exactly that. It's helping people that, you know, if you're at that stage where you feel like you've kind of gone through awakening, a dark night of the soul, and you're doing everything that you think's right, you know, you're doing all the physical stuff, maybe you've got a yoga practice, you're doing your meditation, you're eating a bit healthier, and you're doing everything on the kind of physical, mental, maybe even emotional levels, and you still feel like there's a missing piece, something's still not adding up, and you're still, life is, you know, you're wanting apples and you're still getting oranges kind of thing, or a pattern keeps repeating, that's when I come in, because the missing piece is there's subconscious programs running, and I'm going to reconnect you to your soul and bust through that. So that's the breakthrough. It's not only do I work one-to-one with people to break through some of that, I also do their soul plans reading, which is phenomenal because you connect to all of the energies your soul has given you in this life. And give people the tools as to how they can bring themselves back to balance, how they can break through their own limiting beliefs themselves as they move forward. So yeah, I absolutely love the program. We're opening up again in November, so launch is coming up soon. So if you're interested, do get in touch. But yeah, it's been phenomenal so far. People describe to me like it's a missing piece of the puzzle. It's brought them back home to themselves. It's brought them a sense of peace. They didn't know what was missing. You know, they didn't know that the soul part was what was missing. And that's what I bring in. It's that soul's perspective. It's that reconnection.
Okay, beautiful. So anyone who wants to get in touch with Amy, we were going to be talking, I'll ask her about the contact details afterwards, but I'm going to go through a rapid fire questions with you first. I do this with everyone. I love this bit.
I'm so nervous with this bit. All right.
Oh my God. All right. Yeah, I'm totally going to grill you right now. All right. You ready?
No, but go for it.
Okay. Cool. It's not that hard. So it's only mini questions. Don't worry. Anyway. So, okay. What is your definition of God?
Everything, all that is, source, spirit,
love. Okay, beautiful. How do you define religion and spirituality?
Oh, such a good question. Religion for me is spirituality put into a box with institutionalized dogma and for the purpose of control and power. Spirituality is a person's own experience of access to God without any externalized rules or rigor.
Beautiful. Oh my God. I love how you just describe this. Amazing. What is the lesson that took you longest to learn?
I'm still learning it. How to let go of what
isn't. Oh my God.
And when to let go.
Yeah, I think that's a lesson everyone's going through. I think it's a lifetime, even lifetimes journey.
Yeah.
Okay, so do you believe there is an end to healing?
It depends how you define healing, but in this lifetime, no.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, the one last one. The world needs more of what?
Kindness.
Beautiful. Oh, thank you so much, Amy. Anyway, okay, there's one last question that I want to ask you. If there is one message that you would like to share with someone who's going through adversity right now, who's going through a dark night of soul or spiritual awakening and lost in life, what would you tell them right now?
Yeah, so I'm going to paraphrase this quote from Matt Kahn, but it is so powerful and so true. I would invite you to ask yourself, what if the greatest challenge you've ever been given, all that shit you're going through, is in fact the greatest opportunity you've ever been given for growth and for change and for everything that's up ahead? So flip it on its head. Every challenge is the seed of opportunity. So look for what that opportunity is. Mm-hmm.
Beautifully said. And your dark times make you the person you're going to become in the next 5-10 years. So just keep riding the wave, guys. Okay, so how can people contact you?
All the normal channels, really. So on Facebook, I mean, are you going to put this underneath on...
yes,
you can write yourself. Yeah. So yeah, Facebook is Amy at Amy the Beloved Company. My Instagram handle is Amy_beloved_company, and then it's the same. My website is www.thebelovedcompany.co.uk.
Awesome. Get in touch with her, guys. She is incredible. And I absolutely loved interviewing you today, Amy.
Thank you so much. I loved it too. It's been awesome.
Thank you. Is there any last message that you would like to say?
I'm getting a really clear download in my head. So all I want to say to you guys is, like, the universe is fair, it's balanced, and it's loving. So anytime that you're being pulled in the direction of pain, darkness, challenge, adversity, know that you are going to pendulum swing as far back the other way. So it's just, it's like, yeah, it's a swing, it's a pendulum swing. So the darker the place is that you're at, know that it's because you're going to go even higher in the light and the happiness, the other side of it. So everything is in balance, and have faith.
Yeah, I totally agree. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Amy, for coming on this podcast. Thank you.
Oh, it's been so fun. Thank you, Sia.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening to Soul Awakenings with Madhya Sosan podcast. I would love to know what your biggest takeaway from this conversation has been. Share your thoughts on my Facebook and Instagram, Madhya Sosan. You can also check out my website, madhyasosan.com. If you would like to watch this episode, then head over to my YouTube channel, Mads Corner, M-A-D-Z Corner. If you enjoyed this episode, then please do rate and share this with your family and friends. Thank you once again, and I will see you on the next episode.